Today, we'll talk about how to plan a deluxe one-week trip for a family of four for under $5,000. That's coming up on this episode 32 of WW Prep to Go. Hello and welcome to WDW Prep to Go, where we talk strategy and ideas for people planning their Disney World trips. I am your host, Shannon Albert, the creator of WDWPrepSchool.com, and I am so happy that you are here. I am really excited to talk about today's topic because I think it's really possible to have a really full deluxe trip to Disney World, but still stay on a reasonable budget. And so I'll dive into the details of that today. Before we do that, as always, I need to remind you that you can find me on social media and the website 1 to 2 times a week. The website is 1 to 2 times a week. Social media is more than that, especially the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/WDW Prep School, where I post several times a day. And that's where you're most likely to see news items and random thoughts and pictures that I upload. So be sure to join us there if you haven't already. I also want to take a second to remind you that iTunes ratings and reviews are very important, because if there are people that are just now starting to plan Disney World trips and they really like podcasts and they search for Disney World on iTunes, the podcasts that have the highest number and quality of ratings and reviews will be the ones that come up at the top of the list. And so if you will take a minute to leave one, I would really appreciate it. Today's 5-star rating and review of the day is a short but sweet one with subject great resource, and it is left by someone with the username of SciFiFan30, and the review simply says, "Great tips, great format, enjoyable to listen to. Always at the top of my playlist when a new episode is available on Sundays." So thank you for leaving that, SciFiFan30. I appreciate it. And if you could do the same, your review may appear on a future episode of the podcast. So I wanted to mention recent news and website stuff. One was that I recently just did a comparison of stroller options for Disney World trips. And it seems maybe silly to people who have never been, because it's like, what's the big deal? It's just a stroller, but it's a lot of walking. And so even if your kids have outgrown a stroller at home, you may want a stroller for your trip. And so I did a breakdown and comparison. And of course, there was data involved. And I have a big spreadsheet that I included that compares different rental companies, including Disney World, but also offsite companies that will rent strollers and other equipment. And I just sort of broke it down and compared the prices and all of the options. Like, some of them include insurance, some of them include rain covers to go over the strollers, etc. So you can take a look at that, and I'll provide a link in the show notes. And then in news, we have a lot of FastPass Plus news, and I often don't share news. I sort of try to be evergreen in my posts and in the podcast episodes, and by evergreen, I mean that someone could pick them up a year from now and listen to it, and it would be relevant to them. FastPass Plus has sort of changed that, in that it's something that has to constantly be talked about just to help explain how to tour at any given time, depending on the state of the FastPass system. And so this last week, there's been a lot of developments in FastPass Plus, namely that offsite guests get to use FastPass Plus now. And previously they could use it, but it was something they had to make after they arrived in the park. And now they get to make it 60 days in advance and use the app. And I mean, I'm sorry, 30 days in advance. On-site guests will do 60 days in advance. So there's still an advantage to staying on site, in that you can make your FastPass Plus reservations a full 30 days before offsite guests. But offsite guests, 30 days is still a considerable lead time, considering that most people don't plan ahead before they get to Disney World. So it's a great advantage. And the fact that you can make changes on your phone, just like onsite guests can, is a great option as well. So I'll be modifying my existing FastPass Plus information on the website this week to reflect that offsite guests will essentially have the same functionality as on-site guests, but with just a slightly different time frame before their trip. So it's very exciting. And I know some people that stay on site say, but I think that should remain an on-site benefit. But I really want the maximum number of people to have great trips, and I don't care if they're staying on-site or off-site. This is a great thing for everybody, in my opinion. So that's really exciting. And I think we're going to go ahead and dive into today's topic. Don't forget that I always have a quick tip of the day, and I think today's is pretty fun. It's something I'm actually doing for my next trip. So stay tuned for that at the end. So today's topic is about planning a deluxe trip, and it's going to be a 1 week trip for a family of four, and we're going to try to stay under $5,000. I'm going to make some assumptions that because it's a deluxe trip that we're not going to try to cheap out. We're going to try to have a full featured Disney World trip, and that we're just going to try to do it on a budget. And so I've got some ideas today for doing that. Right off the top, I'm just going to assume that this family of four going on this trip is going to be flying for their trip. Obviously, that varies by family, but just for the purposes of this discussion and making some easy assumptions, I'm going to say that we're going to include four plane tickets for a total of $1,000. That actually sounds like a low number to me because I have paid way more than that for tickets, more than $250 per ticket recently. But there are deals to be had, and so that is a number that can be done. Obviously, if you're driving or you have more people or your flights are going to cost more, then that could totally impact your trip. I do want people to consider, though, that if you're going to take a 1 week trip, that you might not do Saturday to Saturday. Maybe you do Tuesday to Tuesday or something like that, because your flights will be less expensive that way. And it's the same number of days off of work, and it's the same number of days in the parks and all that kind of stuff. And so it might end up being, you know, the same in many ways, but you'll save on flights. So consider that just to get those flight prices down. Now, of course, I'm going to go through my 6-step planning process to work through some of these options for planning a deluxe trip. I almost never, before I plan these episodes, I never actually think, oh, I'm going to use my 6-step planning process. But when I start making notes, I think I've got to organize this some way to make it make sense. And it always ends up back in this format. So it works for me. It keeps making sense to me. So let's start with step one, which is planning when to go on your trip. Now, if you want to stretch your money to have, you know, still the deluxe experience, but not pay top prices, there are some weeks that you'll want to avoid. And I'm going to just list the most expensive times of year. And if you plan outside of that, you will pay more moderate prices compared to these busy times. So the busiest and most expensive times of the year are the last 2 weeks of December, the week surrounding President's Day in February, spring break, which is the usually like the second week of March through April, and it kind of depends. Every year it kind of changes a little bit. Easter, the week before and after Easter, Thanksgiving, and then summer is busy, but it actually is not the most expensive time of year. There are times that are much more expensive than the dead of summer. But if you want to go in the summer during your summer break from school, but pay the least amount for summer vacations, the last 2 weeks of August tend to be the least expensive. So if you kind of avoid some of the peak prices, you can get something that's a little bit more reasonable. But if you end up going in the summer, the last 2 weeks of August will be the best time price-wise. So that's step one. And as I mentioned before, when I was talking about flights, you might want to consider a Tuesday to Tuesday when you're trying to pick your dates, just to see if you can get your flight costs down. Now, step two is where to stay. And since this is a deluxe trip, we are not going to go, you know, super, we're not going to a value resort or anything that's super cheap. We are going to try to stay as deluxe as possible while staying on a budget. And I have two ideas for doing that. One is to rent DVC points. And DVC stands for Disney Vacation Club, which is Disney's version of timeshare. And for the people that own those points, they will often rent it out to people like you and I, and we can use those for our stays. Now, these Disney Vacation Club locations at Disney World are mostly attached to deluxe resorts. So for instance, you've got the Beach Club Resort, but it also has beach club villas that are attached to it. And then you've got the villas at Grand Floridian. At the Contemporary, you have a tower next to the Contemporary that's called Bay Lake Tower. And that's the Disney Vacation Club like arm of the Contemporary. And so there's just a few of these sort of peppered throughout Disney World. And there are some standalone DVC resorts as well that aren't attached to other deluxe resorts, but they're all nice. So I'm considering these deluxe accommodations. And the upside is that you can pay less to stay in these. And so the people that are booked into the regular, for instance, beach club rooms will be paying much more per night than the people that rented points to stay in the beach club villas rooms. There are a couple of drawbacks. One is that the studio rooms are much smaller than a standard hotel room. So instead of having two beds, and in many deluxes, you actually have a day bed. So you actually have three beds there. Instead of having that arrangement, these rooms mostly have a bed and a pull-out couch. They do, however, have a little kitchenette, which is nice because the regular deluxe rooms don't have that. They don't even have microwaves. And so, you know, you get a smaller room with less bed space, but you do get a kitchenette. So there's some, you know, pros and cons to that. You also will pay less, so that's a really nice perk. The amongst all of the resorts that you can rent points to stay at, there are a few that are the least expensive but fantastic accommodations. So I'm going to list three options if you are considering. And by the way, I'll link to more information about how this works in the show notes, and I've got a specific vendor that I use for booking points and all this kind of stuff. There are three different locations that are the least expensive for renting points. One is the Animal Kingdom Lodge DVC location and the Boardwalk Villas. And the Boardwalk Villas are attached to the Boardwalk Inn. And this whole Boardwalk area is just outside Epcot, and it's within walking distance of Epcot. And it's also not too far from Hollywood Studios. So it's a great little area. And then there is Old Key West. And Old Key West is one of those standalone DVC resorts. It's not attached to another deluxe resort. It's just a DVC resort in itself. And the great thing about Old Key West is that it's bigger. The studio rooms are bigger. It was one of the first DVC resorts, and I think they just made the rooms bigger at that point. So they don't have the bed and the pull-out couch. They've actually got two beds that you can sleep. It's more like a regular hotel room. So Old Key West, not too expensive to stay there, and you can get a little bit more space there. So that's my suggestion when it comes to renting DVC points. Another option for where to stay is the Swan and the Dolphin. Now, the Swan and the Dolphin are located in the Boardwalk area just outside Epcot. I just mentioned the Boardwalk Villas. These are located very close to the Boardwalk Villas, and you've also got the Beach Club, the Yacht Club, and these other Disney resorts. The Swan and Dolphin are not Disney resorts. They're located right next to Disney resorts, and they're kind of quasi, I always call them like kind of Disney resorts, because they're not owned by Disney, but they have a lot of the same perks and they have the prime location that other Disney resorts do. The great thing about the Swan and Dolphin is that you can pay less than the deluxe resorts that are right next to it. And especially if you are eligible for discounts, like teacher discounts, military discounts, or nurse discounts, their website currently states that they have rates of starting at $139 per night for those people. I did a little bit of searching for some sample dates, and it was more like $200 a night. So it kind of depends on when you go, but they say they have rooms starting at $139, which is really inexpensive. And that's actually more like a value resort price when it comes to Disney. But, you know, it can be more than that depending on your dates. You can also use SPG points. If you have hotel points through SPG, then you can use those to stay here. And so your visit would actually be free if you had enough points to use there. There are some drawbacks to staying here, and one of those is that you cannot use Magical Express. Magical Express is the free buses that take you from the airport to your hotel, a Disney hotel, and back again. So you would have to figure out how to get between there if you did stay at the Swan and Dolphin. You also can't charge things to your room like Disney resort guests can, but you can use extra magic hours. So you can get into the parks early or stay late when those are offered. And you can also, it was just announced within the last couple of days that Swan and Dolphin guests will have the same FastPass Plus benefits as on-site guests, meaning they can book FastPass Plus 60 days ahead of time. So it's very, very similar to on-site guests. However, Swan and Dolphin guests will not get magic bands. You'll just use your park ticket as opposed to magic bands, but they both work the same way. It's just the magic band is convenient because it's a bracelet and you can scan it instead of having to get out your park ticket to scan to get into the parks or to get onto rides using fast passes. So you can optionally purchase magic bands if you'd like, but it's not required. So there's some, you know, pros and cons to doing it that way. So those are my two ideas, are to rent points and to stay at the Dolphin. Now, if you rent points, depending on when you go, it's going to run about $1,000 to $1,500 for 7 nights. Could be even more than that, depending on when you go. But in the different time periods that I sampled, it was generally $1,000 to $1,500 for 7 nights. And then the Swan and Dolphin do vary a lot between $139 per night all the way up to like $250 per night. But you would have to just kind of research that and see how it worked out for your particular dates. But it's certainly less expensive than the neighboring hotels that are owned by Disney. So that's step two, choosing where to stay. Now, step three is making your daily plan that where you determine where you're going to be each day. This topic will be fairly brief because it doesn't have a huge amount to do with the planning a deluxe trip. I would suggest that the general plan for the trip be to have a fun character meal on your arrival day to sort of kick it off in a fun way. Spend a couple of days at Magic Kingdom, a couple of days at Epcot, a day at Animal Kingdom, a day at Hollywood Studios, and to get 6-day park tickets to accomplish that. Now, you can save a little bit on park tickets by getting it from an outside vendor, such as Official Ticket Center, which is the one that seems to have the best prices from the research I've done. If you get, I am suggesting 6-day park tickets because if you have a 7-day trip, usually at least one day is consumed by just travel. So you, like for instance, arrive in the afternoon, and as opposed to going to a park, I'm suggesting having a fun character meal to kick off that day. So you'd only need 6 days worth of tickets. If you get 6-day base tickets for this family of four, which has 2 adults and 2 kids, then and you get it from an outside vendor, the price would be about $1,250. So far we've got the hotel at $1,000 to $1,500, and then we've got park tickets for about $1,250. Let's move on to step four, which is dining. Now, I'm going to suggest in this case getting the dining plan, which is something you can do if you rent DVC points. You can buy the dining plan to add on to it. You cannot do that if you stay at the Swan and Dolphin. So the suggestion applies to people that are going to stay on site, including those who rent points. Now, I don't normally recommend the dining plan for people that are on a strict budget. Like if you really are, like that's your goal is to pay the least amount, do not get the dining plan because there are ways to do it that for much cheaper. However, the dining plan will, if we take advantage of it, will be a good bang for the buck. And I think it's going to make this trip feel more all-inclusive and more fun. And I did an analysis of maximizing dining plan credits, which I'll link in the show notes. And it basically lists all the restaurants and all the meals and the best values on that plan. And the best values tend to be character meals, like character, particularly character meal buffets. Like those just tend to be the most expensive and therefore they are the best value on the dining plan. And so for this trip, I'm just going to suggest getting the dining plan, the regular one that includes 1 table service credit per day, 1 quick service, 1 snack, and you get a refillable mug that you can refill at your resort. And then using those credits wisely to pick fun dining experiences that would be expensive if you're paying cash. Some examples of this would be, and these are all things I suggest as not only good values, but fun experiences for families. One would be the Akershus breakfast The lunch and dinner are not as popular, and because it has more like Norwegian food that is not appealing to families in many cases. But the breakfast is more just American breakfast that everybody tends to like. It's a princess meal. So if you happen to have princess lover in your family, eating at the Akershus breakfast at Epcot is fun. And it's also one of the best values for a dining plan credit. I would also suggest Chef Mickey's for dinner, and that's actually a fun way to kick off a trip. So if you arrive in the afternoon, get checked in at your hotel, have a dinner reservation at Chef Mickey's, and get to bed at a decent time and get ready to head to the parks the next day. Another idea is Ohana for dinner, which is a great restaurant inside the Polynesian, and that's a big hit with families as well. Or if you have fairly easy access to Animal Kingdom Lodge, Boma for dinner is not a character meal or anything, but it's great food. It was one of my favorite meals I've ever had. And it's a buffet, and it's a great way to sort of sample lots of delicious food if you have easy access to Animal Kingdom Lodge. Then there's Garden Grill, which is a character meal in Epcot, and it spins like very slowly, like throughout your meal. It's going to spend about one rotation, but everything is served family style and the characters come and visit you at your table. And it's very, very, really good value on the dining plan. Lots of food, characters, you know, fun time. 1900 Park Fair dinner is my suggestion if you're going to choose a meal there. And that is inside the Grand Floridian, and it has Cinderella and Prince Charming and the stepsisters, and it's a buffet of food. And so that's a really good value on the dining plan. I have a couple more suggestions here as well. Cape May Cafe dinner is another good one, and this is located on the boardwalk. So if you end up picking a place that's located on the boardwalk, like the Swan Dolphin or the Boardwalk Villas, then this is easy to get to because it's located in the beach club and it's all you can eat seafood. So I'm not really well versed in seafood. So eating here actually allowed me to try new things that I hadn't had before. And so that's a really fun meal. It's not a character meal for dinner, but it's a all you can eat buffet, and it's really easy access to anybody staying in the boardwalk. My final suggestion for the dining plan would be Whispering Canyon Cafe. And this is a fun way to end a day or to have dinner on a day when you're at the Magic Kingdom. Whispering Canyon Cafe is located in Wilderness Lodge, which has easy access to, you can get there easily from the Magic Kingdom by boat. And it's just a really fun environment, and it's really silly. And if you ask for, they like to really joke around with the guests a lot there. And for instance, if you ask for ketchup, they will often bring you lots and lots of bottles of ketchup just to be silly. But that also tends to be very popular with families. So everything I've listed, popular with families, great value on the dining plan, and will really make for a fun trip. So I'll list all these in the show notes, so don't feel like you have to write them down if you don't want to. I do want to point out, since we're talking about dining, that you'll notice that I have not mentioned free dining at all, which is a buzz topic. I think 50% of the emails I receive talk about free dining. And the reason I'm not mentioning free dining is that, first of all, free dining is not applicable if you rent DVC points. It's not available if you stay at the Swan or Dolphin. And if you stay at a deluxe resort on site, usually there's a better discount available than free dining. It will totally depend, but usually there is a better discount. So for people that want to plan deluxe resorts, deluxe trips, I would just suggest that free dining is often not your best option most of the time. So that's why I didn't mention it here as a part of the plan. And step five in the planning process is park touring, but I think we're going to skip that for now because it has very little to do with this trip planning. And at least, you know, everybody's park touring should be planned similarly, whether you're on a value trip or deluxe trip. The philosophy and strategies are the same. Step six is to plan some extra magic. And there's, you know, a million different ways that you can add special touches to your trip. I think one of the best bang for the buck is the dessert party at Magic Kingdom. And it is the Tomorrowland dessert party. And it basically is a buffet of desserts, and you're assigned seating like tables, and you get to watch the fireworks from there. And for this family of four that we are hypothetically planning a trip for, it would cost $68. And I like it because it's just a more relaxed way to see the fireworks because you're not trying to camp out somewhere and save a spot hours ahead of time. You walk in usually about an hour before the fireworks. You've got your own table and you can eat lots of desserts and watch the fireworks. And it's just a little bit nicer way to spend the evening than camping out on the sidewalk. You know, there's other options, like you can decorate the room. The Disney florist will come in and just completely decorate your room, which is a kind of fun welcome surprise, you know, to come back to your room after your first day in the parks and have it fully decorated. But that does run about $300 or so, depending on which package you choose. So there's lots of special touches, but I would encourage you to come up with at least one or two things that you could do during your trip just to make it even more special. So if my math is correct, we are under $5,000 at this point. It kind of depends what time of year you go and which resort you end up picking. But if you go during a less busy time, you could actually end up closer to $4,000 than $5,000, but certainly at least a couple hundred dollars under the $5,000 mark. So I hope that's helpful and gives you some ideas for sort of putting together a trip while also staying within those that budget, that $5,000 budget. Before we wrap it up today, I do have a quick tip of the day. Now, my quick tip of the day is something that I wish I had known about before my last trip where I lost my magic band. And this quick tip is that there is a device called, it's, I don't know if calling it a device is the right thing to call it, but it's a little item called a bit belt. And these bit belts are little rubbery looking latches that you can put on any band that clasps like one of the fitness bands, you know, like the Nike Fuel band or the Fitbit band or the Magic band. And it just helps it to stay on instead of popping out and you can't find it anymore. And that's what happened to me in my last trip. These bit belts come in a variety of colors and they are $5.99 for one. But if you buy more, they go down in price. So if you buy two, they are $5 each. If you buy five, they're $4 each. So this is something I'm going to invest in because losing my magic band on my last trip gave me a little bit of anxiety. And I wasn't even doing anything rigorous at the time. I think that it ended up coming off. I was just sitting somewhere and it happened to just pop off. And so this would actually be able to clasp onto that and keep it from popping off. These are available at bitbelt.biz, B-I-Z. And of course, I will include a link to that in the show notes. I think that's going to wrap up this episode of WW Prep to Go. For more information on this show, you can visit wwprepschool.com/episode32. And that is the number 32. Until next time, I'll see you on the site.